This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The smartest guys around are about to break it down like they've won the game a million times.
Well, actually, they didn't really win the game at all.
Survivor know-it-alls.
Yeah, that's right. The Survivor Know-It-Alls are back here on
that.
A Thursday afternoon.
No, just jumping right in.
Jump right in. We're live.
Oh, I was not ready. Yeah, I was just like kind of like, reading Twitter.
Yes. You know? Anything good? Anything hot?
Yeah. You know, people really love Banu.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. But for the most part. For the most part. Yeah, Banu. Yeah. Very
Other than Brian Cohen,
yes. Everybody else universally beloved. He's won a million hearts on Twitter. And so we'll talk about Banu. Personally, I love that he's here. You know, Josh Wigler in The Evolution of Strategy often talked about, you know, Survivor is great when there are grenades out there where there's going to be, okay, you've got all these great players. Here's Keith Nail for you, Stephen.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Keith at least will stick to a plan. I mean, like, there's that, you know, I mean, that's what, like, literally one of, I was talking to one of the producers after Survivor Cambodia, and I was like, why on earth did you cast this psychotic player, Abby? And they were like, oh, but she's the, you know, she's the shoe in the gears. You know, she's the, like, that's like the
America cast her.
Yeah. Well, she was on the ballot.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I think we need that, especially in the new era where you have everybody is so calculated. Everybody knows the game. Everybody knows what's coming. Yeah. Right. Let's throw a designated wild card on each team.
It is. I mean, it is true. Like, that's what we've been asking for, right? When people talk about not all recruits, not all game bots, what they mean is it's nice to have people who don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And are kind of like feeling it out and making decisions based not purely on like the optimal game strategy divorced from any human context. I do have to say, I find people who say that they're there to win hearts. I find that very, like, I am allergic to that. Like, people who say that, oh, I'm so inspiring. I'm here to inspire people. Like, just be inspiring. You know, when you're talking about it, I'm not inspired. But I do love Banu. And I'm very happy he's out there as the shoe.
And the difference between Banu and maybe some of these players in the past is that Banu seems to sincerely love Survivor. He calls Jeff Probst his guru. And he is very excited to be there, seems to love the show. He's not good at Survivor, but he loves Survivor, as opposed to this is better than, okay, Lynn Spillman saw some guy at a mall and, okay, he looks like a wackadoodle. Put him out there on the show.
I'm never going to critique Lynn Spillman's casting. I mean, Lynn Spillman cast all of the greats of
the
show.
But also, there's also not greats.
That's true. But I do think there's like a certain Survivor type now that is getting on the show of these like absolute flameouts. And I don't think Lynn would have cast those people. And maybe that's a good, maybe that some people love those people and some people don't love those people, the flops.
Yeah. Can I ask you absolute, when you say absolute flameouts, you mean like boring casting choices or people that got on the show and were, because flameout like sounds pretty exciting when you say it that
I'm
way.
Saying the hot messes. And I do think, you know, who like think that they're going to be amazing and yes. then are absolute catastrophes. And again, maybe we like those as podcasters, as viewers, I like it, but some people don't like it. Some people, they're like, I don't want, I got a lot of DMs.
Can't please everybody.
Like, who are these new casts? Where did they get these people? And, you know, it's just, it's a different take.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, we have a lot to get to here today. Of course, we're going to take your questions. We've already got a bunch from the Rob as a Podcast Facebook group for the patrons. So we're ready to go. I'll also be taking calls with the patrons on our Feedback Friday show. That's going to be live at 3 for the patrons of RHAP. That's coming up on Friday. And then Chappelle and I will be back on Monday to do a live edition of Club Condo. Very well received, critically acclaimed 17th place roundtable over this past weekend, Stephen.
It looked very fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, who won?
Well, it wasn't a contest. Zach,
who would have won? Who won the banter off?
Look, you got to listen to the podcast. No spoilers, okay? Zach, Brandon, and then Maddie joined us for that one. And then your friend and mine, Rick Devins, joined me for the post-game show. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You too. That would have been a real banter off. You need to have a banter off, you versus Devins.
A real banter off, okay?
Quip off.
Yeah. This is from Lucas in the chat. He said, last night, Rick Devins compared Stephen to Banu. He said they're both tall, overly emotional, and prayed for the downfall of others. So, Stephen, do you accept this comparison?
No. And in fact, I'm praying for Rick to be smited.
Is Banu that tall?
Unclear.
Yeah.
You can't. You never know until you see these people in real life. I remember meeting, I'm sure I've shared this anecdote, Ben from Survivor Samoa, not exactly my favorite human, but maybe one of the tallest humans I've ever seen. You know, you don't seem that tall on TV. Mm-hmm. The TV is small. The TV is only like this big.
Yeah.
But huge.
I heard Mr. Beast is 6'4".
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's what the word is.
That is surprising to me.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So we'll take all that. Plus, I spoke with Randon this morning and got the chance to talk with him. He is fully recuperated. Stephen, you posted that you thought this was going to be a controversial take, maybe, that survivors should get medical attention and then come back into the game. You frame this as potentially a very hot take, and then you realize quickly that everybody agreed with this.
Yeah. Not everybody. I will say I did get... So, yeah, survivors should have, like, limited medical attention. You know, it also, like, you know, people love to... chime in if you say this is going to be controversial. So say anything you say, you should put this is going to be controversial.
And they're like, oh, actually it's not. Like, because everybody's a contrarian.
Exactly. No, that's a great idea.
This is going to get me canceled, but everybody's like, no, you're not canceled.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm with you on this. I do think that apparently they do this in Australia and Survivor where people can leave the game for 24 hours. You know, I did get some people saying, then it's not Survivor, then it's not real survivalist. So, like, also competing in an obstacle course to win nails is not real survivalism. You know, like, that too is not something that happens in when you're stranded and alone.
Yeah.
But it does, I feel like it impacts the game more when someone is pulled for, you know, ostensibly no reason. You know, it did seem like Randon was fine. You know, we can, Mike Bloom tweeted that there's a little bit more of a complication to that. But, Randon had to get an MRI and then he was fine. Like, why not let him just be pulled for 24 hours, get the MRI, stay on game state food, and then come back? Go ahead.
Well, Stephen, I feel like that what you're describing is like, I feel like that there was precedent for that. I mean, when in the past, many times we've seen like, okay, Russell Swan, we're going to observe him. We'll let you know later on today. I mean that Joe Dowdle was taken away from you all. Right. And then you got word about Joe Dowdle when you, and you didn't pray for that to happen. Right. That wasn't a miracle. You didn't say that was a miracle.
No. No, I mean, it really scuttled the plans. Yeah, so it's true. I think when they take them out of like out of the island or something, but you know, like people are getting hydration, you know, people are getting, I got electrolytes, you know, I've heard of people getting fruit, you know, I think Joe Anglim got like an apple or something, you know, when he passed out. You know, James was always talking about an apple. I don't know if that was
but he had,
he was like, don't eat the apple.
You know, James had an infection in his finger in Fans versus Favorites. And then they took him in and it was like, all right, well, we're going to look at this after. And then the tribe was going to find out later on. So like,
I got antibiotics in token sheens because I had like an infection in my elbow. Like people are getting medical treatment. So the idea that like there's some kind of like firm divide between like what can be transported into a tent and what can't be transported into a tent is so ridiculous.
Yeah. So in this case, we had where, so Randon needed the MRI. He needed to go. He told me in the exit interview, as well as all the other people on the Survivor press, that he actually required a lot of medical attention. He's fine. He is fine now, but he was, it was not like that. He woke up the next morning and slept it off. And that once he slept like in a normal bed, he was fine. He, it took a lot of medication and therapy. And now he is back good as new. So this was not necessarily a case. And I think that maybe when you saw him after the episode and said, yeah, my arm's fine now, that people are like, what the freaking hell? Well, why'd they take him out then? This was overreactionary, but
exactly.
It only got better because he got treatment.
Right. So that, but even so, nevertheless, the point stands, he should have been able to get the MRI and then they could determine if he needed the treatment. And also, maybe they would have decided, you know, they pulled him because there was this fear of a slipped disc. Maybe he could have decided that, hey, there's no slipped disc. I would rather stay in the game. I need treatment. Like, he can probably get some kind of therapy while he's out there. So I do think that, you know, there's still a world where he gets the MRI, sees that it's not life-threatening, and decides to continue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is interesting to see if like the contestants should have the ability to, okay, we are going to take this person for an MRI. I do not know how long it would take for a Survivor contestant to get the MRI. I know this the helicopter is involved, especially this tribe was not even going to tribal council. The incident that everybody references in Australian Survivor, George actually missed a tribal council, had medical immunity for a vote. That was not even the case here for Randon. It should be fine for Randon to go get the MRI, all clear, send him back into the game if that's what he wants to do. The question that I raised last night talking with Rick was, I do wonder if there's an issue here with Survivor's own insurance on the production of that. If somebody has an issue and they have to be taken for some kind of medical exam, and then they get put back into the game, like, does the show open itself up to potential litigation down the road if it turns out that there was a misdiagnosis?
Well, but isn't surely the whole point of getting the further treatment is to avoid the misdiagnosis? I mean, if anything, it sounds like the misdiagnosis came initially, right? Like, you know, or I guess it was actually, it turned out to be a correct diagnosis.
And maybe there's some kind of waiver where the contestants say, like, I'll go back into the game. I'm signing the double indemnity waiver of, like, I cannot, like, basically, this is my choice and my choice alone to go back into the game.
It does seem like, I mean, and there have been tweeners when Jeff has said, this is your call, you know, and the contestants have usually opted to be removed, right? But there have been times when, and I can't think of any offhand, where there has been a medical question and Jeff has said, you know, this is the situation, this is the risk, it's your choice.
Yeah. It's just like, it should be Randon's choice, but I guess when we're dealing with something that's potentially serious, where that Survivor, that in today's world, like something, you know, God forbid, Randon ends up potentially paralyzed because of something that developed on the show. And this is like a huge media story and, you know, a potential like major problem for the future of Survivor. So, you know, there is like an abundance of caution when they come in to deal with these things. Brooke in the chat says something similar happened to my uncle. It could have been something neurological. I'm not shocked that they pulled him. So when we're dealing with, you know, something that could be part of a bigger issue, one with like long lasting ramifications. Like, you understand why they make the call that they do.
Yeah, of course. It just would be nice if they could get the test that they need without necessarily pulling from the game, get more information, and then make the choice.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that one day they will have an MRI in Fiji?
I mean, they're setting up the base camp. Why not have the field hospital?
Yeah, I mean, all these football stadiums, you know, they have the blue medical tent and like take them for x-rays, take them for, you know, I don't know if they have the MRI in the football stadiums, but, you know, look.
Just get a long extension cord.
Why not? Should that be at the sanctuary where MRIs happen? You'll be going to the sanctuary where you'll get a MRI of everything in and outside your body. We're gonna get a full workup on everything, and then you'll know, and we'll send the MRI back to your loved ones at home.
With today's spiraling medical costs, that could eclipse the $1 million prize.
maybe. Yeah. Okay. Evan says most, if not all, NFL stadiums have an MRI tech inside. Steven knew that. He's toured them all.
Which sport is NFL?
Okay. But Randon, in the exit interview today, you know, we talked about some interesting things that Jeff spoke with Dalton. They did an interview about this episode, that the rules were clarified about handing off an advantage to a person from your tribe, that basically once they say the words, "Steven, you are medically removed from the game. You can't give away any of your stuff."
So for all future players, be like, Jeff, quiet. Yeah, just don't say it quite yet.
Well, Randon painted a picture for me in the exit interview where he made it sound like that he was trying to get Venus the Beware advantage, and that he was unable to get to his jacket in time to be able to hand off. Now, what we see in the episode is that they're sitting on the beach talking. They do not appear to be scrambling, but I don't know if the producers like sort of tell them, "Hey, that's it. This is, you know, lockdown. You have to go sit on the beach because Jeff is coming."
Yeah. I saw Dwight from Survivor 43 propose this idea, and I want your perspective on it, where when someone is going to be medically evacuated, they get to have a private farewell conversation with each player individually.
Yeah. Because
there's so much onus on one person to be like, find the time with this like big emotional moment, with this scramble that's happening. Everybody is right there. Basically impossible. But you know, and if you like selected one or two people to talk to, that would be obviously highly suspicious.
But is Jeff administering this one-on-one, like what, you know, when Caleb went to go visit the tribe last season, where he was like, okay, I'm going to have like one-on-ones with everybody?
It's like you know, there's like a little tent and they can, and then, you know, they film it, and the ones that make air are the good ones.
It's kind of like a goodbye message for everybody.
It's like Dorothy leaving Oz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, but Dorothy didn't have a private one-on-one with the Tin Man. She said her goodbyes in front of everybody. And honestly, it was a little bit rude because she made such a big deal about the Scarecrow in front of the Lion, in front of the Tin Man. Like, it was honestly, if you're like Tin Man, you just gave him a heart. It's probably broken, considering what a big deal Dorothy made. Like, said, "Oh, Scarecrow, I'll miss you the most of all."
That's all the more reason if she'd had the private one-on-ones, Dorothy would have been able to communicate that.
I mean, they already have that booth that the wizard hangs out in. Like, that would be perfect right for the one-on-ones.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think it's probably not ideal TV. Like, maybe you have the opportunity that somebody could pass off the advantage. But if Randon, like, had the presence of mind to know that he was probably going to get evacuated, maybe you have to, all right, Venus, hold my advantage just in case they pull me.
Right. That's a tricky one. And then they don't. And he's like, "Can I have that back, please?"
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I honestly, this particular advantage is interesting because that really, it was just a clue to get to the box, where the box really has where the idol is. Like the clue is Bupkis. I mean, it's kind of silly that, he was the holder of the clue, which led him to the box, but the box is where the idol is.
So what happens to that box now? Dead?
I think it's dead. I get the sense that it's a
new clue.
I asked Randon if Venus knew the location of the box. And he said he did tell her, but the fact that we saw her say like, oh, great, my best ally is out of the game with the advantage, it makes me feel like that that is not in play anymore.
Got it. Okay. Okay. Well, that's too bad. But, yeah. You know, maybe she was just depressed in the moment and then she rallied and found it the next day.
Maybe. We'll see. Okay. Yeah. I was a little surprised that we're not going to swap for the next episode. Does not appear to be the case going into episode 4.
Yeah, it does feel like we could use a swap about now.
Yeah. Last season they swapped
Yanu gonna go back to tribal council?
Who's I think win so. This? What do you think was going to happen at that tribal council? Because we got it really both ways. Q told us, boy, Kenzie got off easy because she was going home.
Yeah. That is interesting because, you know, when Tiffany was talking to Banu, she said, you know, I had not yet fully decided what vote I was going to cast. To me, that meant, you know, she was voting for him. Mm-hmm. That's what you say when you know exactly who you were voting for and it was you. So I think that I still kind of think Banu's going home in that situation, right? I mean,
yeah.
Q's perspective, I liked Q's perspective. I'd rather have a liability who I can kind of train up than someone who is a threat. That was an interesting perspective.
Okay, good. I'd love to talk to you about that because I don't know if you can make this liability work over the course of this 26-day game. You tweeted also that your dream would be if somebody called you their Philip.
Yeah. Well, so everyone was like, how insulting to call someone a Philip. But what you
is that what Jeremy said to you in Second Chances? He says, Steven, I'm like the Boston Robin. You'll be my Philip.
Listen, I mean, with Jeremy, honestly, you know, whatever he said, I would have swooned. No, I do remember, though, speaking of Second Chances and an opportunity to talk about my experience, that when I was talking to Spencer, I wanted to secure him as an ally. So I said to him, oh, you'll beat me at the end, you know, because I was like, I wanted him to know, like, hey, I'm safe to go to the end with you. But what he heard, like, correctly was, oh, Steven thinks I'll beat him, so he doesn't want to go to the end with me. So, you know, and I remember, too, Russell in Heroes versus Villains said this to Jerry, like, I'm going to take you with me because I can beat you. And like Jerry's like, great, I'm in, you know? And it actually is, you want to be with the people who think that they can beat you because they're going to stick by you. You don't want to be with the people who are worried about you beating them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So that, do you like talking up wackadoodles and say that, you know, hey, listen, hey, wackadoodles can win.
And I think what Banu so appreciates about Q, and it is funny because Q's like, you're terrible, but I'm taking you with me. Mm-hmm. And Banu's like, yes. I mean, it was funny, Banu's enthusiasm to be told.
Any port in a storm.
Yeah. Well, but I think he appreciates Q's honesty. I think, like, to me, I saw Banu reeling from the sense of not knowing who he could trust.
Yes.
Not having this constant two-facedness is obviously very disruptive for him.
I think that this is not going to work out for Q with Banu because that I feel like that for me, the best comp that you can make with Banu is Ty. And I feel like that there was a point when Scott Pollard and Kyle Jason, that they were working with Ty and they were like, hey, Ty, you're with us. And okay, you're working with us. And they felt like, okay, well, Ty, he's our number. He's going to work with us. And this is, we're giving him an option. But these players that are out there to win a million hearts, where that Banu, he's motivated by who he falls in love with. And then if he meets somebody from the other tribe, like when, okay, Q is like, all right, tonight we're voting out Liz. Banu's not going along with Q's plan. He's not going to write down the name that Q tells him to because he's going to like, I love Liz. So she consoled me when I was down. I can't turn my back on Liz. So he's a liability, but he will never be that soldier for Q. Like he will always still do what his heart wants to do. Like you cannot take Banu and turn him into a loyal number.
I don't know if I agree with the Ty comparison, but I do see your point. Because Ty, I mean, Shireen wrote a great post about Ty as being like one of the most successful Survivor players like of all time. I mean, obviously not having won, but just in terms of like his pure like stats as like, you know, disproportionate to how people perceive Ty. Like Ty is like actually a stellar Survivor player. And I don't feel that is necessarily true for Banu. And, you know, when Ty turned on Kyle and Scott, that felt like it was the result of a long series of pressures and tensions, but in that group. But that said, I do see your point that Banu is not going to be the person who, like, Q's whole, you know, argument in favor of Banu is that he is a loyal vote, whereas Kenzie is not going to be a loyal vote. But yes, like quite the opposite. Kenzie will probably make sensible choices and you can like somewhat predict those, whereas Banu is going to make less sensible choices that are more emotionally based.
Yes.
And I mean, like, even just the very fact of what happened at the last tribal council where he was like going person to person, you know, they had a plan in place and he's going person to person and asking like, what should I do? What should I do? You know, that is not the like, you know, the party line voter that you want as part of your alliance.
And Banu is certainly not a Philip, where to compare him to, okay, Philip just did what Boston Rob told him to. Well, Philip was somebody that, you know, he wasn't ever tempted by somebody from the other side. He hated the other side. He was more against the people from the other tribes than anybody else. And, you know, Philip, that he like really loved this. Okay, so I'm a special agent. Rob is like giving me the marching orders. I'm following the, like, this is the mission. We're going out and following the plan. Like, Philip loved all of that infrastructure. Like, that's not Banu.
Here, I've got who Banu is. Banu is the Dan Gheesling. He's the guy who blows up the entire alliance, ruins the game for your team.
See it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't agree with what Q is thinking in terms of the threat versus the liability. But what about if, okay, so it doesn't seem like there's going to be a swap. But I guess the time when I was like in the episode, I was kind of the most for it when I thought, okay, well, if they are going to swap after this episode, maybe it is the move to take out Kenzie.
Yeah, right, right. And it's reasonable for them to think that there is going to be a swap here. And I mean, Q's argument that Kenzie is, you know, the person going to make a lot of connections and be a self-interested player. Of course, that's also like a good reason to keep Kenzie, right? I mean, that was what was so successful about the Tika 3 was that they were able to form those cross tribal bonds, right? That's what you need when you're down in numbers. Like, that's why small alliances can come back, is because you have this group of people who knows how to operate and they can kind of like pick apart the other teams and stick with your like core group. So I actually think like that's another like sort of like flaw in the logic. Like, even if you think there's a swap, like there's a lot of reason to keep the person who you.
But in practice, I don't think that there was a possibility that Kenzie could have gone home at this tribal council once Banu lost his vote. Yeah. I don't see if only these three people are voting, with it's Kenzie, Tiffany, and Q.
Yeah.
I don't see how Tiffany puts that second vote onto Kenzie.
And I do think that this question of the shot in the dark, which these people are obviously taking very seriously, will factor into it. I mean, the fact that Banu has no chance to inadvertently eliminate one of them, whereas Kenzie could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I didn't see that happening. I was talking with Rick last night. I could have more seen a scenario where if Banu and Q have their two votes, they go to Tiffany and say like, hey, we're voting Kenzie. Do you really want to force a tie tonight or do you want to come with us? And so Tiffany, who I think is a pretty practical player, I think might consider in that scenario, okay, well, do I really want to go into a rock draw potentially to save Kenzie? But in this spot, if she wants to keep, I mean, Tiffany holds all the power.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you know, I think she saw Q's perspective, but obviously from her, you know, from her point of view, her relationship with Kenzie is, you know, strong. It's there. It's like, why would you sacrifice that with for someone who, you know, you don't necessarily have a strong relationship with?
Yeah. So we would imagine this group is going to go to another tribal council along the way and that we do think that Banu is going to go out.
But they were close. I mean, they truly, like, they were very close. So I'm not sure. I see a world where it's, you know, Siga going to, or even Nami now, you know, without Randon on the team, you know, Nami, if it's another tough physical challenge.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about Hunter.
And oh my gosh.
You were very impressed with something specific that Hunter did in this episode.
That move where he grabbed Devin's legs and went over the wheel. That was incredible. Like, that was such smart in the moment thinking. Like, they had this deficit. Like, the wheel was tricky. It just, like, grabbing. It was so cool.
Yeah. And then at the end, he comes out and then just like tossing these sandbags up in the air.
Or the win. And, you know, theoretically, there was some risk to him. You know, Venus was saying that she wanted to get Hunter out.
Yeah, I don't know if there actually was risk to Hunter. After talking to Randon, it did not sound like Hunter's name was really being widely circulated. I think that Venus might have had some suspicion of Hunter, but it does not sound like that was widely held amongst the tribe.
One of the people was tweeting like how great Hunter's backstory was. Gosh, who was it who tweeted this? I think it was a Brian, like that his backstory is like everything works perfectly for me and it all works out. Like I'm great at everything and everything works out perfectly for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like yeah. I was an amazing
relatable.
Doctor.
Yeah.
And I'm like, now I'm an incredible teacher. I'm great at these survivor puzzles. I'm wonderful at camp life and, you know, and I'm super humble and charming too.
Like, yeah. But isn't there another way to look at it where Hunter is a challenge hoarder?
Hoarder?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because he had all those like stacks of challenges. Yeah.
Like your Hunter's roommate, or you know, you're walking around like a. Yeah, can we maybe find a place to? What about a storage unit? What about a garage for some of this stuff?
That might have been his garage.
Oh, you think so? That wasn't like his living space?
It did sort of look like a living room, but you don't know. I mean, we don't know. Maybe he just made up his garage really nice.
A lot of stuff. I think that, you know, if I had like even but one life-size survivor challenge in my home, I'm pretty sure my wife would throw it out the first time I left the house.
Clarion Durian in the chat says new golden boy. I do think there are Joe vibes to Hunter, you know, in terms of like the good parts.
I wasn't saying that. Yeah.
You know, the non bad parts, we'll say.
But this is why I had that reaction because that Stephen, I wanted to know if that your legal team has been engaged in discussions after we heard Liz refer to Hunter as Survivor MacGyver.
I don't know, but yeah, I did catch. Honestly, I was touched by the homage. You know, it's like,
what do you think? No, it was an homage.
I mean, there's no such thing as plagiarism in poetry, right? So like it's like you know, it's like a classic poetic image, right? The Survivor MacGyver.
People don't know what I'm referring to. That I believe it was the name of the episode. But back in Survivor Second Chances, it was Steven who originally coined Joe Anglim as the original Survivor MacGyver.
Yeah, I mean, and who knows? Like I might have gotten that from someone. Like maybe that was like, you know, maybe a producer said that. Maybe like Keith called him that and I was like, yeah, he's Survivor MacGyver. And then that happened to be the clip. Yeah. I don't know, who knows? It's all mishmash.
Better question, who's the Survivor MacGruber? Banu?
Banu. You. Banu,
yeah. Only 10 more seconds in the challenge, Banu. Yeah. Hurry up. This hourglass is running out of sand, Banu. Quick, we need another square piece over here, Banu.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
All right. Let me ask you about the journey, Stephen. We talked about it in the first episode about the new game that they played. Well, what'd you think of last night's activities on the journey?
It seems like these like time pressure games are getting zero wins, which is fun. I mean, it's like fun to see them fail, you know.
I think Drew last season was able to complete the I think it was like some kind of like matching game, which was a combination lock. He's the only person that did it.
Yeah. Well, it's nice that it's solvable. What did you think, though, Rob, about the drawing rocks instead of deciding? Did you think that they should have to like choose?
Yeah, I talked about this with Rick. I mean, who is this for? Why are we drawing these rocks? Like, give the players agency of say, okay, pick two people. If you can't pick, then draw rocks. Like, why are we opening with draw rocks?
Right. I mean, Banu was in it. It was interesting because you would think that Banu would be desperate to play and therefore it would be really interesting. But it sounded like he actually would not have played. Mm-hmm. So it would have been a pretty straightforward decision. Even so, like, it's a decision. And then it comes back to that. Oh, Banu chose to do this. What if he had had this advantage? You know, it becomes like a point of interest for the viewer.
Yeah. Okay. We saw the players come back from the challenge. Kendall asks, how do you rate Ben's lie to his tribe? I thought it was pretty slick since the only person who could rebuke what happened is Banu.
Yeah, and we've seen people who only have found out what happened in the voting booth. So, you know, it's based on what has happened in the past in terms of Survivor, and it was a reasonable thing. And because Ben, I think, led so much with all the fun gossip, you know, it seemed like he was bringing something back for sure. So
yeah,
I think that was nice that he got to have that.
He did get to come home with a lot of gossip. I think that really Banu did a big favor to Liz and to Ben of that. Nobody was worried about their stories because that they're like, oh my God, Banu had an emotional meltdown out there. Right. Like,
yeah.
I know everything.
And I saw a lot of people on Twitter felt that it was really, you know, Liz and Ben were really lovely to him and gave him like a lot of the support and emotional, you know.
Yeah, well, how else would they act in that situation?
Like
Banu, you could act like a man.
Yeah.
Get up.
Smarten up, Banu.
Smarten up. What do you got? Crybaby-itis.
But truly, you know, the reason people are mean to people is because you've lived with them for like 2 weeks and you're like, oh my God, again, you know, it's not like you meet them for like, you know, you spend 5 minutes with them and they're having a breakdown.
Like Shambo goes and visits the other tribe and they're like, oh, Shambo, we love you.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I love you.
And everybody else is like, we can't stand her. Do you have any idea what it's like?
Exactly. It's like, it's always that built up and there's always these players who you're like, why does everybody hate Sierra Reid?
Yeah.
And you don't know, like I didn't hate Sierra Reid when I met Sierra Reid.
Even read the comments on Twitter, like, oh, Rob is so funny. Ask my wife if I'm funny.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a different story when you live with somebody.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like maybe you like this for 55 minutes on a Thursday. But what if it was 24/7?
Is there a soundboard in the relationship?
Maybe that's the missing piece. I'll get it on my phone. Okay. Yeah. So I just going back to the journey. Do you think that Banu, it's like, I think it could go either way. When he gets to emerge, is Banu well received now? Or do you think that, okay, we can't work with this person?
I think you definitely don't want to work with the guy who has an emotion. I mean, I think you like kind of give him the carrot. Like that's who you reach out to, the guy who thinks everyone is out to get you and he knows he's on the bottom. Like that's the guy you try to pull in. So they're definitely, you know, putting out the olive branch to work with Banu, but I doubt that they're actually, you know, he's not going to be a core new member of an alliance.
Yeah. Steven, do you think, what is the percentage chance Banu is sitting at a final tribal council?
Oh, that's interesting. It gets higher, right? It gets higher and higher.
Every week.
The closer he gets to the merge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you could put a percentage chance on it right now, what do you think?
Gosh, maybe four. No, that's too high. 37%. Yeah. Okay. What do you think?
How high?
37?
Yeah. I was going to say closer to 15, I thought.
Because he's got to like make it through the next the next vote. Okay. The next two votes. Yeah.
All right. How about this? This is an interesting bet. Is Banu the most likely member from the Yanu tribe right now to sit in the final three?
Wow. That's fun. I mean, you know, Kenzie really got her spot blown up here. I have a lot. And I think Tiffany is strong too. I mean, you know, I'm team Q. Banu's probably the likeliest of any single person in the game right now to sit at the final three.
Yeah. I would say, that's a really good point. Yeah. I think that he probably is. I think that Tiffany has the most upside to potentially win the game out of that group. But you're right. I think that if we're going through everybody, like, I feel like that he's got a big share of potentially that zero vote finalist spot.
Lock it up right now.
Which is a great spot.
A million hearts, the Sia money, and zero votes.
Is Sia giving the money to Banu?
Definitely.
Really? Sia's going to be moved?
Definitely.
Okay.
Mark it down right now.
Yeah.
March 14th, Sia money going to Banu.
Because, like, she doesn't, like, she like Jesse, you know? Like, she doesn't, like, isn't necessarily, like, the sloppy players.
I mean, she gave Carolyn the money. That was, Carolyn was her, like, all-time favorite.
And Carolyn, though, you know, great strategic game. You know, I don't think anyone, like, people were arguing Carolyn deserved the win over Jam Jam. I mean, no one's arguing at this point, you know, that Banu deserved the win.
I don't mean to insult Carolyn, but I'm saying that, like, I mean, I was on the call. Like, Vasia, like, loves her as a human.
Right, right.
So, you know, I don't think that's, I mean, Sia's not giving the money to Drew.
Yeah. Right.
So I think that you could be both, but I think that, I think that first and foremost, I think that Sia is looking for that person who is going to be like, really being their authentic selves.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, who's the most authentic, person on this cast, would you say?
I think it's the know-it-alls.
Well, I'm definitely the more authentic of the know-it-alls, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I mean, you are probably more likely to, you know, say what you truly feel and get in trouble for it.
I have less to lose. It's one podcast for me. It's your whole, you know, it's your whole livelihood.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. Who's the most authentic person in the cast?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that Banu is like, I was impressed that he was able to come back and lie to Tiffany and to Kenzie.
Yeah, what is the, he should have like come back with like the Rupert rock in his pocket, right? Like, oh, I got something here.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, what could they have done if he would have presented that he had an extra vote?
You know, he's just like, I don't know. What is the move? Well, not the Banu move, but like the correct move if you're, you know, for anybody coming.
Do you want to present that you have an idol when you come back? I mean,
I think you want like nebulous powers.
Yeah. I think that maybe if I'm Banu, maybe I want to like sort of like keep it vague enough and then get the one-on-one with Q and then sort of like, okay, what are we doing?
Yeah, I got this idol here. Like, what's the plan?
Mm-hmm.
Because you know he's going to back channel it. And then, you know, of course, that risks that they try to flush the idol. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, really, you would just be trying to fake out Tiffany to think, okay, well, I got to put the vote on Kenzie tonight because I don't want to deal with Banu and his idol.
Yeah. Well, right. I mean, that's what you're hoping for. Yeah, exactly.
Let's take some questions from the listeners here. Okay. All right. Harley Jaffine wants to know, with Randon gone, what's the best move for Venus, Steven?
I find someone else. Just find a different ally. Liz.
Praise to the merge, right there, the as great Coach Liz. Once said. Yeah.
Hey, I need to give Liz, you got to check out Liz's Twitter. She's very, very funny and self-deprecating about the whole money thing. And her profile emojis are, I thought were very humorous. So
I started the Liz bandwagon.
Liz Wilcox 88, I think is something. The Liz Wilcox 88. Mm-hmm. There we go. Yeah. The Liz Wilcox 88. Very, very humorous and self-deprecating. And
you
very
have to.
Somewhere. Yeah.
I mean,
listen, I know.
Yeah, you got to. All right. Okay. How about a question? All right. This is from Aaron Flea Sperling. Who's the most difficult tribe mate Steven has had to work with a la Banu? And is it worth it to keep somebody like them in the game if they potentially can't win?
I mean, obviously it's Abby. I think Abby is harder to work with than Banu, because when Banu is paranoid, he just becomes an absolute mess. Whereas when Abby is paranoid, she like tries to turn it on you. You know, she like tries to take out her allies like first. And you know, to like has like, it's like a total scorpion and the frog thing where like the people who are helping her, she inevitably stabs. Mm-hmm. And so definitely Abby, what was the question? Like, oh, is it possible to keep them in the game? Listen, I think that's where Boston Rob's incredible success mm-hmm. was, is that he had the ability to bring Philip with him. I think for most normal players, and I would count myself among that, yeah. I don't think I would have that capability.
But I just think that like all these players are unique and different in different ways. Like that, and I'm not saying that there aren't other players that are like them, but Abby is not Philip, is not Banu. Like they are three like very different types of people, and that there are other like archetypes of players that are like more similar, but it's just, you can't just, there's not one category of players who could be liabilities and then you put them all in this one box.
But there are players who are not going to, I mean, I do think it's not crazy that when, if you are playing the game of Survivor, you're thinking, these are the people who act predictably, these are the people who act unpredictably. Right. In general, I would almost rather have like a predictable enemy than an unpredictable ally.
Yeah. So, you know, in Survivor the Amazon, if I may for a moment, you know, there were probably a few of these players that were around where you had Matthew, who was probably, you know, similar to like a Philip, like he was like a pretty loyal soldier until he wasn't. About like, okay, he was looking for, okay, what are we doing? You had Butch, who was a loyal soldier, but you didn't know what he was going to necessarily say or do with the other players. You had Christy, who certainly like had her own ideas about the game, but was not necessarily going to take orders if she didn't feel with her heart that that was the right decision. So all these players, it's really about understanding what motivates each of them. And then can I be consistently giving them? And Rob is a master of that. If you watch him on Deal or No Deal Island, we podcast it every week, that he knows like what these people want. Okay, do they want the big brother? Do they want the father figure? Do they want the bro? Like which of these things am I giving to people? And then he's able to consistently give them what they need to keep them moving in the direction he wants them to move.
That is, and I think that is like the best Survivor players are like have that strategy. Like they're thinking like emotionally of what each person is looking for. And Ethan Zahn, I remember he told me that before I went onto Cambodia. I did a terrible job of that, but I do think you need to. That is like that's what the best players do. It's like
Suri is great at that too.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
I'm gonna be the type of person that, you know, I need to be in this relationship to you know, help keep things going my way.
Who do you need to be in this relationship, Rob?
Look, this is very easy to do this with Steven, that we have been doing this for, what is this now? We started this in 2012, so this is 12 years of doing the Survivor Know-It-Alls. Oh my God. If I didn't love doing this with Steven, like it could not have gone on this long. Steven would have quit.
You would have. You got a lot of other guest hosts who you know, happy to step in.
Mm-hmm.
And screw all of you. It's my spot.
Yeah. And look, and we're able to like fend them off because I love doing this podcast with Steven so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what keeps everybody coming back.
Yeah. Well, this is very fun. It's this starting to sound valedictory. Like this has been so fun.
Are you
fun,
wrapping
Bob.
Up? Is this it? Are you conceding the podcast tonight? Justin Feinberg wants to know for Steven, how many hearts did Steven win playing Survivor?
I think I lost hearts. You know, I think that was quite the opposite. You're like, oh no, I started liking him, but
I don't think that that's the case. I mean, you won many fans' hearts for them to vote you back into Cambodia.
Yeah, but then I lost them. That's what I'm saying. You know, I like started negative, you know, slowly through podcasting and tweeting. I won people's hearts and I lost them all again. And now I'm like building it up again. Mm-hmm. What about, we didn't talk about Jem here. Jem found the bigger.
Jem found the idol. I thought that the most odd thing about this was that Survivor flashed back to this from, it said 4 days ago on the screen at SIGA.
Yeah, but that's like asynchronous storytelling. It's very, you know, that's like very novelistic.
I guess so, but why? I mean, that for our purposes, like she could have just found the idol on day six. I mean, did it change anything for us of knowing that she had the idol on day two versus day six?
So you would say just pretend. I mean, they certainly have in the past.
They certainly have in the past. Like,
yeah. I mean, for example, Hunter, this episode, you know, I think someone noted, like, yes. Where did he get the rope?
Yes, I saw that
on
Twitter.
He won it in the challenge.
Right, and it's fine. Like when it matters, when it makes sense, like don't show us like a conversation that happened on day 12 to explain like the vote that's happening in episode two.
Right.
You know, I think that that's sort of like disingenuous, but I think that they like, this was, I'm not really understanding why they did it this way. I'm not complaining. Yeah. I want to understand why it was so important to have this be a flashback to 4 days ago.
Was this like a genius move? Like, you know, the genius, you know, not like a genius move, but like the genius.
Well, usually these genius things end up like changing our perspective. Oh, that changes everything that now I know that piece of information. Like, oh, Steven, how did it change for you? The Metallica versus Taylor Swift battle, knowing that Jem had the Beware advantage in her pocket the whole time.
That's very funny. I didn't even think about that. Yeah. Think of all the things we have to go back and reconsider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So good for Jem. You know, she's been kind of quiet through three episodes. Happy that she has an advantage. I mean, looking forward to seeing the other tribes have to play Survivor at some point.
Yeah, that would be interesting. It would very, very, very. What do you think? Do you like it though when there's like one? Because, you know, from a narrative perspective, there's something to be said for this is the focus. We kind of get a little bit of like bits and pieces of the others. And then the other, you know, because we're still learning everybody, learning about their relationships, and having like one kind of narrative focus makes it very easy to like get in deep on this group. And then we can learn more about the others as the season goes on.
Yeah, I like it on paper. And I think it worked better last season where, you know, you had like such an epic tribal council with that third tribal council that Lulu went to with Sabaya and having to burn the candle. And so there kept being additional layers. They had the first tribal council where Hannah quit. And then, so that was not even like a real tribal council, and then it was like the tension was like building. But here, I don't know necessarily, like maybe we would have gotten that exciting tribal council where Q was trying to pull off this move to save Kenzie, but ultimately the way that it worked out, I just feel like that this was not super exciting in terms of like what ultimately ended up happening in the episode. And you know, what are they going to do? It's a medevac, and so they have everything planned out. So you know, I would have loved to have seen a tribal council, but what, you know, you can't do anything about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Who gets the fishy this week? I have two options and I want to talk through them. Okay. And tell me if I'm forgetting someone. Oh, I guess three. Cause Jem got the Beware advantage, you know, a week ago, two episodes ago. So Q, I thought.
Yeah, it should have been in the premiere.
Yeah. Q did a good job. I thought, even though they didn't go to a vote, even though he didn't have a plan come through, of keeping Banu, you know, connected and grounded and connected to the tribe and certainly connected to him. I think, though, because I think I gave it to Q last week, that it should go to Liz, because I do think the move of the episode was Liz picking Banu to go on reward.
Oh, interesting.
Or on the journey. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that she had any sort of a presence of mind? I guess that she was sitting out of the last challenge. And so she was able to really observe the whatever was going on in the challenge from last week with the arch challenge. So
right.
I guess it is possible that Liz was like keenly aware of what was going on with Banu from the way that he was getting so emotional during the last challenge.
Yeah. And the person you want to pick typically, and tell me if you disagree, is the person who is like the most troublesome for the tribe, right? The person who is going, you think that they want to eliminate.
Yeah.
Or the person who, you know, like in Token Chains, we would often like pick Coach because we kind of got the sense that there was, or Brendan, because we kind of got the sense that there was like a Brendan Coach thing, you know? So you want to increase problems for the other tribes.
Yeah.
And so Banu was a really good pick for that because he could have increased problems had he gotten an advantage. And he had this meltdown where he totally spilled the beans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that that's actually a very outside of the box call for the fishy. I'm on board with it.
All right, fishy for Liz.
Good for Liz. Okay. Yeah. The G Gamer wants to know, do you think that Banu can recover like Emily in Survivor 45?
No. I think there's a pretty big difference between those two. And Emily lost. So did she recover? But Emily, you know, just needed to, and it's true. It is an interesting comparison. Emily, who's like, you know, started with this like total hostility to the tribe, on the outs, you know, couldn't stop telling, you know, people strategy, and then gets this kind of motivating speech from a coach figure. Mm-hmm. And then is kind of like has the self-awareness to reel it in. Does Banu have that self-awareness? He's gotten the speech, and it so far does not seem like he's had that kind of awareness of, you know, if anything, he was complaining to Ben and Liz that, oh, they're calling me emotional over there.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, like he's complaining about it.
That was the point in which my 10-year-old son, yelled at the television, and you're proving their point. So I don't know. I don't know if we're doing a good job or bad job parenting. Okay. Ryan Irwin wants to know, what do you think of Charlie's chances? I feel like he's being set up as a big player. Are you seeing that, Steven?
Yeah, I like Charlie. I mean, Charlie seems great.
Last week, you and I agreed that we felt like that Maria was in the best position in terms of our reading of the edit, but it was a quiet night for Maria.
Yeah, and Charlie is right there with Maria, too. I mean, the two of them are at the center of the tribe. You know, we're certainly seeing Charlie perform well in challenges, you know, to whatever, if that's good or not. And he seems to be doing really well. But yeah, I think Charlie's probably a big player on the season.
Okay. All right. From Bella wants to know, why did Jem throw the box in the bushes rather than rebury it? Do you think someone else will spot it before she can get back to it? Well, honestly, like, this finding the box, if Venus can't open the box without the thing, like, does she even need to hide it? I guess she doesn't want people to, like, know that she has it, but...
You don't want, like, someone to stumble on the box itself accidentally. Like, that's not great.
Not ideal.
Okay. Well, could you steal... I guess you couldn't take the box. Could you move the box? I don't know.
You could move the box.
Yeah? You could, like, hide the box from the other person?
Yeah, and then Jeb's like... did anybody see, I had a cube, yay big.
So you think it's interesting because you could not hide, you couldn't take someone's idol and hide it from them. That would be against the rules of the game. You think you could take the box because it's not that person's.
I think that would be something that they'd have to clarify the rule on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. If I find your idol and you've buried your idol, I find it and I move it. Like that's not kosher?
I don't think so. You can't take someone. I mean, I don't.
What really, if I don't tell anybody?
Well, obviously it happens. People take people's stuff or bags and, you know, move things around. I don't think you could hide someone else's, like take an idol from someone's bag.
What if I don't tell anybody and I never admit it? Like, could that happen?
I think you could probably hide. I mean, Tyson, like, always talked about, like, hiding the machete as, like, a potential source. Like, can't phone me out. I'm the only one who knows where the machete is. I think that you honestly probably could hide tribe stuff more than you could hide someone's individual possessions. But yeah, if you just did it and didn't, you know, the cameras weren't around.
I mean, would, like, the producers, like, interrogate us one by one? Of, like, who moved? Would they give somebody a new idol?
If they lost it, gosh, that's funny. I don't know.
And it didn't happen on TV, so I think they'd be annoyed that, you know, this potential thing was not even usable for television. How do you explain it to the audience other than a confession like, so I lost the idol?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's do one more question with Steven. And Kendall wants to know, does the Claire sit out rule stop the tribes from getting too small? If one tribe gets down to two people, it forces other tribes to sit out players multiple challenges in a row.
What?
You know what? Kendall brought something up. I'm gonna pivot from Kendall's question. Say, is the sit out rule working? Like, are you?
It almost worked. Yeah. I mean, the fact that they could, you know, you can't just sit out the same people. I think, you know, we definitely saw, you know, some people who might have, you know, Venus struggling in the swim, right? Mm-hmm. She was going, you know, she was swimming. She was doing the backstroke. She and someone else were doing the backstroke. And I was like,
you texted me. You were annoyed about this.
Just the backstroke. You're not motoring anywhere on the backstroke. At least, you know, though they weren't. And I think Hunter actually sort of like helped a few of them along in the swim. I think Hunter helped Venus along. So, and as a result of that, Yanu had a, you know, was in it, you know, and it was only through Hunter's incredible ballsmanship that Nami was able to come back at all. So it did seem like it could have helped.
Yeah. Steven, were you buying that Q was going to put his name out there for consideration to get voted out by the tribe? Or do you think
I did not like that. I mean, I think that was sincere in the moment, but yeah, it was obviously very... You know, when the athletes are quitting, then something is going wrong. You know,
oh, like, my God. Oh, my God. Could you imagine Twitter today if Q would have said, hey, everybody, I lost the challenge. Vote me out.
Yeah. I think it was just like a moment, like a low moment. Like, these poor people have had just consistent losses, no food, no fire.
They also had a particularly bad rainstorm that there was the secret scenes floating around of basically there was like a monsoon that hit the beaches on the night of day six. So that when they're waking up and they were like sleeping underneath that rock, that all the tribes were hit by a huge rainstorm. And so Rick Devens was speculating on the podcast last night that they got tarps because bad weather was expected, but they had just been hit by bad weather. So I think that that tarp was especially desired.
Right, right. And I mean, you know, to go for a week on Survivor with zero fire, that's hard. That's mm-hmm. really hard.
Yeah. Okay. Steven, anything else for you going into week four?
No, it was very fun. I'm liking it. You know, it's a great show. Well, you know, Survivor's a good show. Yep. I was disappointed that there was no Tevin tonight.
Yeah, we got some different people all the way around. So yeah, not a lot from Tevin, not a big soda week either.
Yeah, yeah.
So
Tevin turning on soda next week. I mean, you know, you can never trust the preview, but that's...
Well, that was one of the things in speaking with Randon that, you know, we've seen soda in a relatively secure position in the tribe, but Randon said that he was feeling like that soda was a target and he felt like that he was really putting soda's name out there with Tevin.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So great job here by Steven Fishback. Oh. Yeah.
And Liz.
Okay. Yeah. Fishy for Liz. Yeah. We have coming up in just a little bit, we are going to have our This Week in Survivor History trivia quiz. Each week, I'm taking on a titan of trivia from the new era. And this week, I took on Brando.
Whoa.
No Pokemon questions. You'll find out. That's going to come on live right after this. And then at 3:30, we got such a busy day here on the YouTube channel. It's like a network, okay? Mm. We've got the Amazing Race recap. Amazing Race kicked off season 36, Ghost Island, on last night. So I'll have a recap with Jessica Lease and Mike Bloom. That's going to be at 3:30 Eastern, so watch that. We also talked with Sandra. Puya and I caught up with the Queen, Sandra, last night. And so that was a very fun podcast. Check that one out. And then we've got Love is Blind coverage live tonight at 9 p.m. of the reunion show.
Whoa.
You ever watch that one?
No.
Okay. Oh, a lot of controversy.
Really?
Yes.
Hmm. Hey, a question for you. We didn't talk about the scene between Banu and Kenzie. When Banu goes to Kenzie and is like, help me, I don't know what I'm doing. And Kenzie's like, okay, I'm willing to talk to you, but you have to give me ideas. Like, and Banu's like, how outrageous, how could... Oh, we didn't talk about Mermaid Dragon. How do we talk
mermaid
about
Mermaid Dragon.
Yeah. Dr. Amanda had a very funny tweet, which was like, from above the waist, I too am a mermaid.
Yeah,
like,
that was very funny.
Key aspects of a mermaid are not... above the waist.
Yes, yes. But I did get what he was saying.
Yeah, but I don't, you gotta participate. You can't just be the one like asking.
Especially in a four-person tribe. He's like, okay, yeah. So what do you want to do? Are we voting out, like, are we voting out Q or are we voting out Tiffany?
Yeah, it's like a very, it's like one or the other, you mm-hmm. know? And Bonna's like, I can't, you, how dare you ask me to throw out a name?
Mm-hmm.
What's wrong, you know, but that's why we love Banu.
Yeah. So I talked about the weather. I do feel like that after these sort of like cold, rainy nights on Survivor, I think that that is when you do see players and people like at their lowest. And so when Banu is like in that very emotion, like, I guess for us, it's played as though, okay, he went from the tribal council where he was very unsure about his position. I feel like such a fool to it's the next morning. The part we didn't see in the episode was that they got monsooned on for 8 or 9 hours. And so he's looking like especially disheveled, like everybody's right. in a very low low point in their Survivor playing careers, like at that point.
Yes, that's a great point, Rob. Like that is really like that's such a good observation that, you know, after you and you know, he said I didn't get any sleep. Like after those long, impossibly, those nights are so long. You say 8 hours, you're like, okay, 8 hours. That's not that long. 8 hours being monsooned on in the cold,
yeah.
you know, is That's actually 7,000 hours.
Yeah.
It's so
And also,
miserable.
Like, I don't know if you ever had this experience of having to go to tribal council in the rain, but it was like one of the worst experiences from Survivor, where that, you know, we got into the rainy season in the Amazon. And I think it was like, we went to the tribal council. I think when I was like when Heidi got voted off. So it was like very late in the game, it was like day 36. And then, you know, you're doing a lot of like standing around and waiting, and you're just getting poured on, and you know, you have to just stand there. You're waiting for the camera crews to get rolling, and their whole operation is slowed down because of the rain. So you end up like getting like far more exposed to the rain by having to go to tribal council also in bad weather. And so that can also contribute to why maybe even Q is like especially down at this point in the game.
Yeah, and it really does. And it messes with your head too. You know, I mean, you're not making rational decisions. You're exhausted. You know, you're not thinking straight. Your body is sort of like shutting down almost.
Yeah. Here, this is an interesting question. What was the worst Survivor night for Rob Zeman? I mean, for you, Stephen, it had to have been, I guess we have a couple of options, but I'm thinking gastrointestinal distress.
Yeah, that was like truly the worst. And because that was a monsoon. That was crazy. I mean, I was like my clothes were drenched, but like I didn't even take them. I didn't want to go out into the monsoon and get them more drenched. So I would like strip off my clothes, walk naked into the jungle, be sick, walk back, like put on my clothes. My tribe, everyone in my tribe is having the worst night of their lives. And I had to like go into that monsoon again and again because I was so sick. Yeah. And they all thought that I had like some secret stat. Like Jeremy was like, because I had just come back from, you know, I got the tube, and they were all, I thought I was going to like the club condo, you know, my club condo. So that was the other, like, they didn't even like have that much sympathy.
Nobody had sympathy for you. Yeah. I was going to also, I know you've been to Exile Island overnight also. So you've had some rough ones. I would say that night that I described of coming home from tribal council in the rain was particularly bad. There was also a night on Survivor All-Stars where, and we had actually just gotten a tarp that we had won the Home Depot shelter building challenge. And we got a tarp. We had not hung it up yet. And so this was like the night that I think Jerry Manthe was like, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. So it was probably worse for some of the other tribes, but we were just basically like it rained and thundered and lightning like all night long. And it was me and the entire tribe just like underneath like the tarp, like on the ground. And it was just like the like most disgusting situation of like, just be like under like with these, like there's like all this wetness going on outside. It was rather humid and muggy underneath that tarp. It was not a lot of sleeping going on. So there's some rough nights out there on Survivor. You know, we can joke around about Survivor is soft and whatever. And I think that you could do 100 days standing on your head when there's no rain. But
yeah,
the elements are the great equalizer on Survivor.
Yeah, apparently that's what like Randy said on Heroes Villains. It was like, we didn't even, you know, it didn't rain in Gabon. Like this, we didn't even play. I didn't even count. Like, cause it was like so much harder when it's pouring down on you.
Yeah. All right, Stephen, where can people keep up with you?
Just follow me here every week. I'll be, you know, Thursdays at around 2-ish.
Yep. Okay. I want to check in with, we'll love to see what Steven's thinking about all week. This week, you came for the green, yellow, red resistance bands.
It's crazy.
And I haven't encountered this in the wild. So what's going on with the resistance bands?
At least with like perform better resistance bands. And apparently every resistance band has its like own set of tiers, which is also crazy. But it's like the easiest is yellow. Like what? Like, and then the second easiest is red, and then green is one step harder than that, and then blue. Like, green means go, red means stop. It's like, why mess with it? In game design, people who, you know, mess with that like fundamental idea of like green is go, red is stop. Like, we all stick, you know, everyone knows that. Don't reinvent the wheel here. It's considered bad design. Why would yellow be the easiest? Why would green be the next easiest? It makes no sense. It's offensive. It's really offensive. And that's just in one brand. Like apparently other brands have different, you know, different metrics.
Yes. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
This is Steven's platform. We want uniformity on all the resistance bands.
No, it doesn't have to be, but like green should be the easiest. Okay. Yes. That's so straightforward. Unless there's a reason. If there's some reason that like yellow's the easiest, please tell me, because they would free me from this anger.
Okay. All right. And then you mentioned this, and Kendall mentioned it in the chat. And then what's going on with the New York Times? Was this like a Wordle thing?
The connections puzzle, which is a very fun game. I think it's like only like a couple months old. Yellow is the easiest, then green, then blue, and then purple. And it's basically the resistance band metric, and it's crazy.
Okay. Yeah. Lala Lauren says, these tiers are wackadoodle.
Wackadoodle. Thank you, Lala Lauren. Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. This was a fun one. We appreciate when you give us a like, and I love to read your comments after the episode. So let's see what you have to say about what we talked about, and make sure you're subscribed for more from the Survivor Know-It-Alls. Take care. Have a good one. Bye.